जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन पल्लभा गिरिवार धारी जय गोपी जन पल्लभा गिरिवार धारी यशोर नंदना ब्रज चन रंजना यशोर नंदना ब्रज चन रंजना यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी नया राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन पल्लभा गिरिवार धारी यशोर नंदना ब्रज चन रंजना यशोर नंदना ब्रज चन रंजना यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama. Kishore, Jaya Kishore. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada. Jayam Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivajakacharya Ashtotarashata Shishi His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Karantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. Vishnu Panaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutanaya Srimate Bhakti Vananda Swami Niti Namine Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pachani De Nirvishesha Shunyavani Basajani Shatarine. Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 5, Text Number 16. Please repeat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text number 16, please repeat. Loka Swayam Shreyasi Nashta Drishtir. Loka Swayam Shreyasi Nashta Drishtir. Yortan Samiheta Nikama Kamaha. Your tansa mi heta nikama kamaha. Anyonya vaira sukalesha hetor. Anyonya vaira sukalesha hetor. Ananta dukam chana veda mudha. Ananta dukam chana veda mudha. Loka svayam shreyasi nashta drishtir. Your tansa mi heta nikama kama. Anyonya vaira sukalesha hetor. Ananta dukam chana veda mudha. Loka svayam shreyasi nashta drishtir. Your tansa mi heta nikama kamaha. Anyonya vaira sukalesha heto. Ananta dukam chana veda mudha. Lokam svayam shreyasi nashta drishtir. Your tansa mi heta nikama kama. Anyonya vaira sukalesha heto. Ananta dukam chana veda mudham. Mukha svayam shreya sinashta drishtir. Your tan sami hetani kama kama. Anyonya vaina sukadesha heto. Ananta dukam chana veda mudha. Loka svayam shreyasti nashta drishtir. Your tansami hetani kama kama. Anyonya vairasukalesha hetu. Pure tan sami hetani kama kama. Anyonya vairasukalesha hetor. Ananta dukam chana veda mudha. Anybody else? Okay, word for word synonyms, please repeat. Loka, people. Svayam, personally. Shreyasi, of the path of auspiciousness. Nashtadrishti, who have lost sight. Yaha, who. Artan, things meant for sense gratification. Samiheta, desire. Nikamakamaha, having too many lusty desires for sense enjoyment. Anyonya vairaha, being envious of one another. Sukha lesha heto, simply for temporary material happiness. Ananta dukkam, unlimited sufferings. Cha, also. Na, do not. Veda, no. Mudha, foolish. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Due to ignorance, the materialistic person does not know anything about his real self-interest, the auspicious path in life. He is simply bound to material enjoyment by lusty desires, and all his plans are made for this purpose. For temporary sense gratification, such a person creates a society of envy, and due to this mentality, he plunges into the ocean of suffering. Such a foolish person does not even know about this. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word nashta drishti, meaning one who has no eyes to see the future, is very significant in this verse. Life goes on from one body to another, and the activities performed in this life are enjoyed or suffered in the next life, if not later in this life. One who is unintelligent, who has no eyes to see the future, simply creates enmity and fights with others for sense gratification. As a result, one suffers in the next life. But due to being like a blind man, he continues to act in such a way that he suffers unlimitedly. Such a person is a mudha, one who simply wastes his time and does not understand the Lord's devotional service. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7:25, Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavritaha mudho yam nabijanati lokomam ajam avyayam. I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them, I am covered by my eternal creative potency, yoga maya. And so the deluded world knows me not, who am unborn and infallible. In the Katha Upanishad, it is also said, Avidyayam antare vartamanaha svayam dira panditam manyamanaha. Although ignorant, people still go to other blind men for leadership. As a result, both are subjected to miserable conditions. The blind lead the blind into the ditch. End of Srila Prabhupada's purport. So this is Lord Rishabhdev's teachings to his son. And we'll read the translation through one more time. He's speaking that due to ignorance, so immediately he identifies the cause. So we hear, due to ignorance, and then a whole line of things follow that. Like you knock over the first domino, and all the rest of the dominoes fall over, right? So due to ignorance, what happens? The materialistic person does not know anything about his real self-interest. That means he's like an animal. So the definition of an animal is one who, he doesn't know anything. He doesn't know what is me, and if I don't know what I am, then I certainly don't know what is my self-interest. He is simply bound to material enjoyment by lusty desires. So, two things are being bound together. What are the two things that are getting bound together? No? Yeah. The ignorant mudha, the ignorant person, is getting bound to material enjoyment. And what's binding him? What's the rope that's tying the two together? Lusty desires. So that means they're not meant to be together. If we have to tie them up, that's not a natural lock, and like a lock and key fit together. So the living entity is bound to material enjoyment. Everybody's engaged in material enjoyment. And we hear that we're supposed to extricate the self from this ocean of material enjoyment, so-called enjoyment. But we're bound to it. So like a prisoner, you know, his hands and legs are all tied up. You know, you tie somebody to a tree, let's say, as a punishment. Sometimes the child's running around being very mischievous. Like Mother Yashoda, she bound Krishna to the grinding mortar, right? So you can like just tie somebody up to a tree and then they're stuck there, right? So if we can understand what's binding us, then we can get free. So here Rishabhdev is revealing that what is binding the conditioned soul to this life of material enjoyment? It's simply lusty desires. There's no other cause. That is the rope. And it comes in different flavors and scents and sizes and shapes, but lusty desires. So Krishna says that about lust in the Bhagavad Gita, that lust is not a good thing, is it? Someone might say, well, because they don't even know what their self-interest is, so the immediate reply will be, well, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with lusty desires? They're my friends. I wouldn't be able to enjoy without them. You're propounding that we should not be bound to a life of material enjoyment. Well, what's your proposal? That we should be bound to a life of material suffering? You know, lusty desires are my friend. But Krishna has the opposite opinion in Bhagavad Gita. He's not very, doesn't have a very high opinion of lusty desires. Right? Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajaguna Samudbhava. And then, what's the quality of this lust? Mahashano Mahapapma. It's the greatest destroyer. Lust is the greatest destructive force in this world. Vidyenam iha varinam. Mahapapma, it's the greatest sin. Lust is the greatest sin. It's the greatest destroyer. And varinam, it's the greatest enemy. So this is the problem with the conditioned soul. He doesn't understand that lust is my enemy. So when you don't understand that someone's your enemy, you foolishly ally with them. Thinking, when do you ally with somebody in a relationship or contract or something? When you think you can gain something from that ally. But Krishna is saying we have nothing to gain from lust, because it's the greatest destroyer. It's the greatest enemy, and therefore it's considered the greatest sin. Why is it so sinful? Sometimes people ask like that. Well, why is that sinful to have lusty desires? I'm not hurting anybody. You know, if I want to take some intoxication in my own privacy, in my own home, you know, get high and enjoy a trip or something, I'm not hurting anybody. You know, or if I have some illicit sex or some intoxication or some gambling, or, you know, I'm not hurting anybody. But it's the greatest sin because it's destroying the self. It's destroying the ability of the self to see the self and to understand what one's real self-interest is. So when we know we have an enemy, what's the first thing we should do? You hear, oh, I have an enemy. Enemy means you're in trouble. You're not going to gain, you're going to lose. So what's the first thing you should do if you hear, oh, there's an enemy out there somewhere? Richard. Okay. Richard's asking, well, I thought we were supposed to be equal-minded to friends and enemies. We're talking about conditioned souls here. First of all, the verse is about conditioned souls. And secondly, we can be equal to our enemies in that we love, you know, we hate the sin but not the sinner. Right? A doctor hates disease, but he doesn't hate the diseased patient. He loves the diseased patient. That's why he does everything he can to get rid of that disease, even if it looks violent, like surgery and chemotherapy and, you know, cut off, amputate, whatever. So, like a doctor, he understands this person has an enemy in the form of some cancerous growth or something. So what's the first thing we do when we understand we have an enemy? Yeah, figure out, well, where is the enemy? Is it hiding in my backyard? Is it under my bed? You know, like, where is it hiding? Because you can't deal with it, right? If you have a disease, well, okay, I know I feel horrible right now, but where's the disease? Is it in my stomach? Is it in my blood? Or in my heart? You know, where's the disease? Figure out where it is, and then you can deal with it properly. So Krishna is so kind, he tells us where our enemy is. We don't even have to go looking for the enemy, you know? So Indriyani Mano Buddhir Vasya Dishtanam Uchyate. He's explaining the senses, all the indriyas, the mind, Mano, and Buddhir, the intelligence. These are the sitting places of lust. You don't have to go look out there for your enemy. The enemy's right here in our own senses, our own mind, our own intelligence. And well, what's wrong with them being there? What are they doing? Okay, first you identify who is your enemy. It's lust. Where is he hiding? In my senses, in my mind, in my intelligence? And what is he doing? What's his, like, strategy? Right? I'm sure in military arts, this is one of the things. You want to figure out what the strategy of your enemy is so you can get behind there and do something to spoil their plans, right? So what is it that the enemy's doing that's so horrible anyway? What's he doing? Yes, and how, what is the mechanism? Krishna's further explaining in that verse that etar vimoha yati, that the lust is bewildering the living entity. When it's sitting in the senses and the mind and the intelligence, what is lust doing? Just sitting there? Lust is not just, okay, you know where your enemy is. He's hiding under the bed. Well, what's he doing? Is he just sleeping? No, he's doing something. Well, what is he doing? Oh, he's setting a fire under your bed or something like that. So what is lust doing when it's sitting in our senses and our mind and in our intelligence? It's doing two things. Vimoha yati. It's bewildering. Don't you experience that? That the intelligence gets bewildered? So bewildered that we end up doing something extremely embarrassing and foolish that later we say, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. But of course we did that. We say something, later we regret that we said it. We do something and we regret that we did it. Because the intelligence got bewildered. And the mind gets bewildered. And the senses get bewildered. They want things that aren't good. I shouldn't eat that, but I eat it anyway. Right? I know I shouldn't go to that website and look at that stuff on the internet. We were reading some weeks ago that 30%, that's like one-third, of internet traffic is pornography. That's a huge percentage, you know? Huge percentage. Because the senses get bewildered, and the mind gets bewildered, and the intelligence gets bewildered. And what else is lust doing? Jnanam avritya. It's covering one's knowledge. That whatever little knowledge we have, that I'm not this body, I'm spirit, soul, what I should be doing, what I should not be doing, all these, completely covers it. Have you ever lost something and you can't find where it is? You're like, oh my God, where's my wallet or where's my telephone? And you're just like, wow, you look all over the place, you just can't find it. And then you go to take rest at night and it's like under your sleeping bag. Yeah, and you didn't see it because it was covered. You looked everywhere, but you didn't think of looking under the blanket. So like that, lust just covers the intelligence. So this is our enemy. So how do we get lust in the first place? Is it just like falls out of the sky? And okay, we know who the enemy is. We know where he's hiding. We know what he's doing and why it's bad for us. But like, how did he get there? Somehow we opened the back door and let him in. So where does lust come from? If we can know where lust comes from, then we can make sure that back door is locked so he never gets in again, right? So that's also explained, right, Dr. Richard? No, you can answer if you... Okay, that's fine. Okay, envy and. But like, how does lust come to manifest in our life? Okay, it's born out of Rajaguna. That's, we quoted that, Asha, Kama Asha, Krodha Asha, Rajaguna, Samudbhava. But Krishna says earlier, right? And we should know this verse. Everybody knows this verse, I'm sure. But we should always be meditating on this verse because this is exactly where we're at. This is like super practical, you know, take-home points. That dhyayato vishayan pumsa, right? Sangasteshu pajayate. Sangat sanjayate kama. So what gave birth to kama? What gave birth to lust? Well, being attached to or having affection for objects of the senses. Well, where did that attachment come from? Where, how did I become attached to sense objects? How did I become attached to enjoying sense objects? Because I was contemplating the sense objects with a spirit of, how can I enjoy it? Dhyayato vishayan. I was meditating somehow or other on sense objects. Because, you know, every 5 feet they're on the billboard, so they're always in my face, and every building I walk into, the sound vibrations are going into my ears, and it's inescapable. So we think I'm just an innocent victim of all the propaganda and advertisement and everything. But actually, it's not the vishayan, the sense objects, that are evil or bad or wrong. It's our dhyayato, meditating on them with the spirit of, how can I exploit it? How can I use it for myself, for gratifying myself? That's what's evil or bad or wrong. So that means, if we know the progression, how did kama or lust come to sprout up in my senses, mind, and intelligence? Now we just have to figure out, well, how did it get there? It starts with contemplating the objects of the senses. Contemplating means I try to think, what's that? Oh, check it out. Let me think about that. We try to think about it. And when you make enough effort, spend enough time doing it, then you become attached to that sense object. So you can't get it out of your mind. You're in the middle of a math exam, right? Something that you really got to concentrate on. It's very absorbing. And you're right in the middle of a math exam, and, you know, that little advertisement jingle comes up in your mind, and you're thinking about that cola and that bottle of beer or this or that, you know. You can't get it out of your mind. That's what attached means. You're stuck. Right, I was using some glue the other day to put some material on wood, and that stuff, when it gets on your hands, you're like, gosh, it took forever to get it off. Your fingers get stuck together, and you become attached. So here Rishabhdev is saying that due to ignorance, the living entity, materialistic person, doesn't understand what his real self-interest is, and he simply becomes bound to material enjoyment by lusty desires. And when he becomes bound to material enjoyment by lusty desires, then what follows? That his whole life is just spent making plans for more enjoyment. That's all he does, just for this one purpose. How can I enjoy? Okay, I have lust for this thing. Now, how am I going to get it? Oh, well, if I go get some money, then I can go and get it. Then I have to have a house to put it in. Then I need a garage to house my boat. And, you know, pretty soon, it's just making plans. And for what? For temporary sense gratification. That's all one gets out of it. After all of that endeavor, all of that planning, all of that energy expended and effort, what does one get? Temporary sense gratification. And for that temporary sense gratification, a person creates a society of envy. Because there's only so much sense gratification to go around. Sense gratification means, it means I want something more than is my quota. To just be concerned about having the basic necessities of life, that is not sense gratification. We're supposed to acquire the basic necessities of life. That is not fruitive activity. Fruitive activity means I want something more than just the bare, simple, basic necessities of life. And in order to get that, well, I'm going to have to compete with you because the world has enough for each man's needs. It is exactly enough. By Krishna's arrangement, if there's 5 billion people on the planet, there's just enough for their needs. If there's 50 billion people on the planet, there's enough for each person's needs. But the world does not have enough for even one man's greed. So as soon as that greed comes, I want more than I need. Well, the only way I'm going to get it is by competing with others. So that's what the society of envy means. Oh, you have something and I want it. Or I have something and ha-ha, you don't have it. So it's a world of exploitation, competition. That's what envy is. And then due to this mentality of competing with others for temporary sense enjoyment, then one is simply plunged into an ocean of suffering. And he's so foolish that he doesn't even know about it. So why should one plunge into an ocean of suffering if he's enjoying? Seems kind of contradictory. That I'm, the more money I collect, then why should I say the more poverty-stricken I am? Or the more food I eat, the more hungry I am. That's like, that doesn't make sense. So why is it saying that the more one pursues sense enjoyment, the more one suffers? It doesn't seem to make a bit of sense. But that's what Krishna is describing, is the nature of enjoyment in this material world. Yehi samsparsaja bhoga. Bhoga, that enjoyment which is born of contact with the material senses. You take your material senses, the senses which allow us to hear and see and smell and taste and touch. Allow those senses to enjoy by interacting with sense objects. Okay? Krishna says, yehi samsparsaja bhoga. That kind of enjoyment, which is born from allowing the senses to interact with their sense objects, dukkha yonaya evate. That certainly, that is the womb or the birthplace of suffering. Everybody complains. That's all people do day and night. Complain about how they're suffering. Oh, my headache. Oh, my financial problems. Oh, my spouse. Oh, my roommates. Oh, my everything. That's all they do is complain. I'm suffering, whining and crying, you know, trying to get people's sympathy. Well, why are you suffering? Instead of complaining about it, does complaining about your headache make your headache go away? Does complaining about your financial problems make your financial problems go away? No, why don't you do something about it? Find out what the cause of that headache is, or the financial problem, or whatever. So this is what Krishna is saying. You are suffering, but don't complain about it. I'm telling you why you're suffering. You're suffering because dukkha yonaya evite. The womb of that suffering is that samsparsaja bhoga, that enjoyment which comes from trying to interact with the sense objects for the sake of enjoying. Then adyanta vanta konteya, na teshu ramate buddha. That one who is intelligent, he does not engage in this kind of enjoyment. Why? Because he knows it leads to suffering, but he knows why it leads to suffering. So why does it lead to suffering? Okay, I do experience, I admit, that every time I try to enjoy, I suffer. But I don't know why. Maybe I'm not doing it right. Maybe I should just change partners or change this or change that. No, Krishna is saying why it causes suffering. Because it has a beginning and it has an end. Every sense enjoyment starts when I contact the sense object, and it ends when I release my grip on the sense object. So how is that enjoyment? It's actually suffering. I have to work so hard to contact the sense object, and then when I am released from touching that sense object, then I am disappointed. So this is why. So we have the mudha and we have the buddha. The buddha means one who's intelligent. He does not engage in such enjoyment. And then the mudha is the fool, foolish like an ass, that he does engage in such sense gratification. And Prabhupada said in his purport that even though one is suffering life after life after life, and he knows it, still he simply, again, continues to act in the same way, unlimitedly. So I believe it was Einstein who said that this is the definition of insanity, to think that I can do the same thing over again but expect a different result. To think, if I just do the same thing over and over again, I'll get a different result. No, that's insanity. You do the same thing, you're going to get the same result. So this is the mentality of the mudha. He just thinks, I have to just do it one more time, and this time it'll work out. So Rishabhdev began this whole string of explaining what happens with the cause of all of this. And what did he say the cause of this whole quagmire is? What was the cause of all this quagmire? Ignorance was the very first domino that got knocked over. That simply due to ignorance. Ignorance of what? Ignorance of the self, ignorance of Krishna, ignorance of our relationship with Krishna, ignorance of how I'm supposed to act in that relationship, ignorance of what is the fruit of that relationship. So how does one get that knowledge? Well, in order to know Krishna, in other words, how do we can't know ourselves unless we understand Krishna. So how do we understand Krishna? By engaging in devotional service. But as Prabhupada quoted in the purport from the Bhagavad Gita 7:25, that naham prakasha sarvasya, that yoga maya samavritaha, that the foolish people are covered by my yoga maya. And what is being covered up? Their knowledge of the path of devotional service. As soon as one is introduced to the process of devotional service, that means the door is opened for him to know Krishna. Because you can't know Krishna except through devotional service, right? There's no other way. There's only one way to know Krishna, and that one way is pure devotional service. So if we can inform people, introduce people to devotional service, then their ignorance will be destroyed. That's exactly why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in this world. That by propagating the Yuga Dharma of Harinam Sankirtan and propagating the science of devotional service, nothing else needed to be done. Simply by engaging in devotional service, all one's ignorance will be destroyed and real knowledge will come. And that's why the previous verse said that any leader, whether a father or any kind of a leader, guru, that they shouldn't engage their dependents in fruitive activities. Because fruitive activity means I look at sense objects with the idea of how can I enjoy, whereas devotional service is opposite. I look at sense objects with how can I use those to please Krishna, use them for Krishna's sense gratification. So that's why it said, don't disturb the minds of the foolish, just engage them in acts of devotion. Because by engaging people in acts of devotion, they will be starting to practice utilizing things for Krishna's pleasure, and gradually, all their attachment to their own sense gratification will dissolve. Because from bhakti comes knowledge and detachment, not the other way around. So this is our mission, to spread the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because there is no cure for this ignorance. So we see, due to ignorance, a whole quagmire comes out of it. So how do we destroy ignorance? By engaging people in devotional service, some agyata sukriti even, to get them started. But we have to understand that we're fighting a huge war out there. Because if the few of us who are sitting in this room go out with all of our energy and all of our spare time at the top of our lungs, with all of our efforts, and try to spread Krishna consciousness, it's wonderful. But what we're doing is like a teeny, tiny drop compared to the ocean, an incredible ocean of negative propaganda that's being, you know, bombarded on, you know, the people are being bombarded with this negative propaganda, beginning with the material scientists. So this is why they're mudha. A materialistic person does not know about his own self-interest. And he doesn't even care to know. That's even worse. And why doesn't he care to know? Because he's been thoroughly convinced, although there's no good arguments, no good evidence, no logic, no reason, somehow or other, he's been thoroughly convinced, befooled, bewildered, bribed, scammed into thinking, I am a bag of chemicals. All right? Consciousness is a product of matter. So the atheistic so-called scientific propaganda out there, they're working 24/7. They have many, many, many more soldiers in their army than the entire Hare Krishna movement has on this planet. If you take every single devotee on planet Earth and compare them to, and those are the soldiers of Lord Chaitanya's movement, it's insignificant in number compared to the number of people who are working on that in that other camp, the scientists and all their cohorts, you know. And they're working 24/7, 365. If someone's sleeping in this country, well, somebody's on the other side of the planet doing the same work. So we have a really, really, really big challenge. Because as long as we allow ignorance to keep being propagated, then we're guilty of people being stuck in this quagmire that we were just discussing today, that Rishabhdev was delineating. So it's our duty to go out and destroy that ignorance by propagating Krishna consciousness. And part of propagating Krishna consciousness is to show people that what they're being fed is wrong. Prabhupada said, worship of Radha and Krishna is our private affair. And defeating the scientists is our public affair. And we shouldn't think, well, what does it matter? Why do we really care? What does it matter if the universe is shaped like an egg, or if it's triangular, or if the world is flat, or the world is round, or if the species just like popped up out of nowhere, or which came first, the chicken or the egg? You know, it doesn't really matter to me. And actually, honestly, it doesn't matter to me. I really couldn't care less, you know, what shape the universe is and what the mechanism was for how chickens came into this world. Or, you know, it really doesn't make a difference to me. But, so we might think, I don't need to know all these things, because who cares? We're just going to tell people how Krishna is really beautiful and he plays a flute and he has a girlfriend and he has pet cows and... So we might not really care. It doesn't make a difference in our life about all the scientific arguments. But it does matter because they, the enemy, they are propagating a very invalid theory that everything evolved from chemicals. And if people don't know what the truth is, then they must accept falsity as truth. So if we don't tell people what the truth is, then we're guilty for allowing them to take shelter of untruth. So on a personal level, we might not care at all about how all this came out. You know, we know Krishna was the source. That's all that matters. Krishna is the source of everything. Argument closed, right? Case closed. But to understand how Krishna is the source of everything, how did everything get here? And, you know, what was the mechanism to the best of our ability? Then we can feed people truth. But if we don't feed people truth, then they are stuck with untruth because it's the nature of the soul, Sat, Chit, and Ananda. That soul is, by nature, sentient and knowing. So it's natural for people to want to know, where did the stars come from? Where did the planets come from? Where did the species come from? Where did life come from? Where did consciousness come from? It's not illegitimate for them to ask those questions. It's a sign of intelligence. But if we allow the scientists to feed them their answers, and we don't supply them with the real answers, then we're guilty of allowing... That's what lust is. Lust covers the knowledge of the living entity and bewilders them with incorrect understanding. Mayaya paritta jnana. Their intelligence gets... Their knowledge gets stolen by illusion. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is indeed a movement of going out and propagating Premanam Sankirtan and engaging people in devotional service. But it's not divorced from logical argument. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed that himself. He took plenty of time to sit down with the Mayavadis, patiently listen to them, and then turn around and defeat all their arguments. You know, he could have been just like rolling in ecstasy, chanting, but he decided to sit there, patiently listen to them, and then forcefully defeat all their arguments. So Lord Chaitanya's movement is not divorced from this, you know, educating of people and defeating. And today, Mayavadis means scientists. That's what it means. They're just in a different cloak, old wine in a new bottle. So, otherwise, as Lord Rishabhdev concluded the verse, that such a foolish person does not even know about this, and because he doesn't know about all of this, he continues on in his foolish ways. So unless we educate people, then we're guilty of letting the blind lead the blind into a ditch. So we'll stop there because it's getting a little late and see if there's some questions or comments. We'll start with Jai Jagannath Prabhu.
I was just saying, we hear the phrase Chaita Guru, you know, and prayers never really go in vain. So, I mean, I just happened to come across a book, and, you know, one thing led to another, but it was due to a devotee getting those books in the stores. So, but I was just thinking, read the paper the other day, we're going to have a new Burger King in the neighborhood, thanks to our alderman, and, you know, here's somebody who's been to the temple, taken prasadam, and then here he is pushing Burger King on us. So, I don't know, these kind of things just came to mind. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Jai Jagannath Prabhu.
I had a question in the devotional arena and a question in the last point of your discussion. And in the devotional arena, Krishna speaks about, in chapter 2, the qualities of one who is self-realized. And most of the discussion is about one who can control his senses. And the very outset, Krishna makes a point. It's just like a tortoise who can withdraw his senses within. In other words, he can use his senses according to his desire. And then the question comes out, well, is that difficult for him? And Krishna says no, because he's experiencing higher taste. So in the realm of devotional service, we've gained some knowledge by such discussions, but we still find that our mind, senses, intelligence is totally contaminated. and we've taken up the process of bhakti, but we don't experience a higher taste. And so although we have the knowledge, it oftentimes gets covered in our attempts to retract from sense objects. So how does a practicing devotee overcome this? I'm not experiencing the happiness of bhakti just yet, and I still have this lusty senses-minded intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still compelled to do things I know I'm not supposed to do.
Yeah, so when one actually has a higher taste, then controlling his senses isn't even something he has to think about. It comes naturally that the senses are only used for Krishna's service and not for the service of lust. But unless and until we have that higher taste, then the only way we can control our senses is through knowledge. But lust tends to cover our knowledge. So, yes, we're kind of like in a danger zone right now. We've extricated ourselves from the material world. We're living in the association of devotees, keeping ourselves protected by 24/7, being, you know, surrounded by devotees and devotional service, etc., etc. Yet, we haven't actually attained bhava bhakti. It might take lifetimes to get there. So while we're on the platform of sadhana, which can be lifetimes, because bhava bhakti means we're beyond sadhana, now we're at the sajya, or the result. So for those months, years, or lifetimes that we're going to be on the sadhana platform, we are in a danger zone, and we should never think, I made it home, I can relax now. We have to always be on guard, and that's why we have to always read Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's constantly reminding us. So we might think, oh yeah, today I heard, where does lust sit? Lust is my enemy, and how does lust come there in the first place? But I guarantee you that as soon as breakfast prasadam is over, we'll completely have forgotten that. So we might think, you know, I want to study esoteric verses from the Shastras, and I want to study so many of Krishna's leelas, and I got all this like erudite stuff I want to study. But actually, what we should be studying is Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 2, chapter 3 is all about where is lust and how to overcome lust, how to control the senses. Because unless and until we are actually situated in that state of bhava where you're always experiencing a higher taste, then you are always being seduced by lower tastes. And of course, we have to keep very strong relationship with devotees. And sometimes it's really a drag to live with devotees, you know? You got a whole bunch of people. You know, I bet if you took all of us that are in this room right now and we didn't come in contact with Lord Chaitanya's movement and Prabhupada's, you know, mission, I highly suspect that no two of us would even be talking to each other. You know, we're like different species, totally cut out of different cookie cutters, you know? Probably no two of us would even fathom being friends with this person or that person, or what to speak of rooming with them, you know? So it's very difficult to live with devotees. But you know what? If we don't live with devotees, what are we going to be doing? Then we have to associate with people who are nothing but victims of and propagators of lust. And what's the nature of lust? It doesn't just peacefully sit in the corner and burn. It spreads like wildfire. So if I am in contact with people who are victims of lust, it's just a matter of time before that flame spark, you know, jumps over to me and sets me on fire with lust. So we have to keep two things: very strong association with devotees despite all the difficulties, and we have to constantly hear. And we should not think Bhagavad Gita is ABCs and I'm finished with it. That's proof that we're not finished with it. That's proof we haven't even begun, actually, that if we have that mentality. There's no other way to overcome lust. Because in the association of devotees, we'll always be doing devotional service. We'll always be hearing and chanting. How many of us are going to have a Bhagavad Gita class at night by ourselves? But because we're in the association of devotees, oh, okay, let's assemble and have Bhagavad Gita class. Oh, and you said you had a second.
Yeah, like some of my recent mails to you, I've been particularly interested in the topic of the mundane science to be fooling people and how to have the ammunition that we will require to preach to people to show that it's not correct. And I guess I was wondering about like persons who are actually qualified in our movement taking up such a service, because I'm not like the dumbest guy on the block, but it would take me some time to really understand the things thoroughly enough to present it in a very confident way in order to remove doubts. But there are persons who are able to do that, but it seems they're not getting the necessary inspiration, or they don't have the necessary Krishna consciousness even to take up such service. So the last part of your class was a little disconcerting because of,
well,
this point.
You know, there might not be too many persons around with such great qualifications, but all of us, doesn't matter what your background is or what you think your qualifications are or are not, all of us can hear Prabhupada's lectures where he, not really, well, there are lectures, but mostly morning walk conversations and room conversations that Prabhupada had with his scientific disciples, where he offers very seemingly simple, basic, but very strong arguments that we can learn and use ourselves. And then also Sataputta Prabhu, Jutakarma Prabhu, and Madhava Prabhu spent really good time and energy producing the Origin magazine, Origins. And that was meant to be simple for anybody to read and study. And so we don't need to reinvent the wheel. We should take the materials that are there and actually study them. If we really study Prabhupada's, you know, Life Comes from Life book, right, Conversations with the Devotees and many of his recorded conversations, and we study that Origins magazine, that's enough right there to go out and really protect the innocent. You know, we're not meant to go out and like try to defeat the scientists. We're meant to protect the innocent, like those thousands and tens of thousands of kids at the university. They're just like children getting spoon-fed poison. So the mother has to come in and slap the hand and, you know, put real food in his mouth. So we're meant to go out and convince the innocent, unless you're like so super qualified you can go and attack the main propagators. And in that pursuit, we'll also be protecting ourselves, because honestly, we're the ones that are still bewildered by modern science. Right? When Prabhupada on every page was, you know, defeating Mayavadis, he turned to his disciples and he was saying, well, this is you, actually. I wrote these books for you because you still have Mayavadi tendency. So we still have our faith in modern science, right? So by studying the Origin magazine and Prabhupada's recorded words, we can become thoroughly convinced ourselves. And that's why we're not able to convince others, because we're not thoroughly convinced ourselves. So we have to work on ourselves first. Okay, maybe we have time for one or two quick questions, Prabhu.
Mataji, you were saying that lust is our greatest enemy, and then where it is, then it is in our senses and mind and intelligence. And what is it doing? It is bewildering us. So my question was like, what is the solution for that? And we discussed that by propagating Krishna consciousness and engaging in devotional service, we can overcome lust. So does it mean that by engaging in Krishna consciousness, that means that we are trying to substitute lust with love, for love for Krishna? So my question is love a substitute for lust in this world?
Love is the real thing, and lust is a perverted reflection of it. So by engaging in devotional service, we overcome lust because, oh, well, look at this. Look at these. Here's a beautiful bouquet of flowers. It looks so beautiful, and it smells so good. But if somebody engages me in devotional service, let's use these flowers in Krishna's service, then if I'm thinking, oh, these flowers are for Krishna, then I can't be thinking, oh, these flowers are for me. You can't. It's like opposite, right? But if somebody doesn't engage me in devotional service and teach me how to look at those flowers as something for Krishna's pleasure, then I'm forced to think of them as something for my pleasure. If you don't have love, then you must have lust. There's no in-between. You can't just, you know, if you want to get rid of the darkness, you turn on the light. But if you don't turn on the light, there's no other way to get rid of the darkness. And if you turn on the light, you don't have to do anything to get rid of the darkness. It just concomitantly dissipates, right? So we have to turn on Krishna Prema channel, and then the other channel is turned off because they can't run simultaneously. So to the extent that I'm engaged in devotional service, to that extent I won't be engaged in the service of lust. So it behooves us to figure out, how can I arrange my life so that I can always be engaged in devotional service? Sometimes we think, well, I don't like this association, so maybe I'll just come and get association a couple hours a day or on the weekends, and I'll go out there and do something else Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. Well, okay, see how long you last, you know? So we have to, it behooves us to arrange our life so that we can always be engaged in devotional service, because we're going to be victimized. You know, unless you're some like Uttama Bhakta that can go out there and not be affected, you know, catch the big fish but don't get wet, as they say. You know, how many of us can do that? So it's real easy to say, no, no, I can go out and do this and do that and remember Krishna while I'm doing it. Oh, okay. You know? Then we're like Uttama Bhaktas, that we see Krishna everywhere. That's the definition of an Uttama Bhakta. That even he's, you know, happens to be in the association of a bunch of, you know, low-class non-devotees, he just sees devotees. He's in the midst of an atheistic environment, he just sees Krishna. But that's not the position of a Kanishta Bhakta. So we can't imitate the Uttama Bhakta. We have to be in that mood. I really need help. I need devotional service. That's our problem. We're very lackadaisical. You know, we're at the Hare Krishna Country Club here and got 3 nice meals a day and, you know, the building's warm and this and that. And it's really fun to sing and dance and play musical instruments. But we have to be crying for devotional service. But we're not going to cry for devotional service if we're not thoroughly disgusted by the attacks of lust, which come in very subtle ways, not just gross sense gratification. So lust is our enemy, but we're not convinced that lust is our enemy. So we're not crying for Krishna Prema. We have to cry for Krishna Prema. And that means I'm crying for devotional service, because that's the only way to get that Krishna Prema, right?
So Mataji, if someone has a pure love of Krishna, so he won't have lust.
That's right. Does darkness exist where light is shining? That's the only way you can defeat lust, is by turning on the Krishna Prema. Krishna Prema is like the light and lust is like the darkness. Okay, maybe we'll end with Himanshu Prabhu. You had something?
I was just going to kind of share and ask a question about my recent experience with going on books, encountering these people and, you know, having to argue back with, like you said, things from the morning walks. But then you said something that kind of answered my question. You said we have to work on ourselves and, you know, learn to place faith in these things ourselves before we learn how to convince others. So kind of answered my question.
Yeah, because we don't want to get into arguments. If the student's not submissive, the teacher doesn't speak. So yes, we'll be stuck sometimes having to argue with people, but if we can't defeat their arguments, then you don't want to go there. Because if you can't defeat their argument, then you've lost. Even though in your mind, you know, you're not defeated, but in their mind, you're defeated. So it's a slippery slope, as they say, when you get into preaching, because as soon as you can't answer one of their questions, challenges, then you've given them more ammunition, actually.
That doesn't mean, therefore, don't preach. It just means get yourself ready. What's the first volume? There's six volumes to the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. What's the first volume entitled? Do you know? A lifetime. Yeah, not a few years in preparation. Prabhupada spent a lifetime in preparation. And he began his external preaching movement at the age of 70. He spent an entire lifetime preparing himself. The soldiers don't just go out on battlefield. They spend years physically getting trained, mentally getting trained, you know. Serious business. Okay, anything from this side, and then we'll end. Okay, I think we went a little over. So, did I miss anybody here? If it's quick. Okay. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.